Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of Bavarian Podcast Works. This is Chuck Smith and I'm here to bring you the weekend warm-up, BFW's weekly show where we hit on all of the latest and greatest news of the week. First off, let's get started by saying I apologize for the late release of this podcast. I did have to attend my grandmother's funeral earlier today. Of course, that's always a sad occasion. Though if you do remember, way back a couple of years ago, I did write a little bit about her and her knack for holding a grudge, which a lot of the readers at that time found pretty amusing. She was an older Italian woman who absolutely did not forget anyone who slighted her and could absolutely hold a grudge with the best of them. I know a lot of you got a kick out of that at the time, but did have to attend that earlier today. So appreciate the patience as I was dealing with that personal stuff. And now I am back on the airwaves. Are these airwaves? I don't even know. But I'm yet back here on BPW doing what I like to do, talking to all of you about Bayern Munich and the German national team. And I'd be remiss if we didn't start off by talking about that effort from Bayern Munich that we saw earlier this week against Lazio. Now, if you listened to me on the post-game show, you probably felt the energy coming through because I was revitalized. I was looking for something. A lot of times when you're a fan and you're sitting there and you're watching games and your team is slumping and you're not really feeling the vibe of what's going on, it's tough. I know a lot of people out there were going through that, where watching Bayern Munich absolutely became an unenjoyable experience. It wasn't fun. It was frustrating. It didn't help that the coach and the players are on the opposite side of the fence, which with a lot of things right now, it made it difficult and it made it really tough as a fan to sit there and watch them play in such a poor manner, to look so apathetic toward matches. I had a really difficult time for weeks there watching them just because of the way that they approached the match and how hapless they often looked during those contests. But that all went away, and maybe it was just one day. Maybe it was just lightning in the bottle. But for that one moment, Bayern Munich against Lazio, they figured it out. They took Tuchel's tactics, they applied them, and they played great. All of the players out there, they played up to their potential, and even better than their individual potential. Collectively, they reached that level that I think we all knew that they could hit. Now, listen, you can take all of this with a grain of salt. Lazio was a wounded duck out there. They had nothing to offer. They were tired mentally and physically. When their own manager recognized that and openly talked about it before the match, it kind of gave you a clue that Lazio just wasn't going to be mentally able to focus enough to pull off an upset at the Allianz Arena. And physically, they were fatigued and beat up, just as Maurizio Sarri said. So Bayern Munich did what it needed to do. And now it's started to build a little bit of momentum. And we'll see if that carries through to Mainz this weekend. I would hope it would. I want to see that true championship earmark come out of this team. Now, I know it's a long shot in the Bundesliga. It's a long shot in the Champions League, quite frankly. But there's no reason to think that they cannot continue to build off of this. use that energy in a positive manner and really start to make a push here. Bayer Leverkusen, right now, they're a machine that does not look like it's going to be stopped. But even if Leverkusen goes through and they win the league, it doesn't mean that Bayern Munich isn't talented enough to take on the likes of Real Madrid or Manchester City in the Champions League. Quite frankly, those are the two best clubs on earth right now, whether anyone wants to really admit that or not. And we'll hear talk about Arsenal. We might hear talk about some other clubs. You can forget them all. It is City, Real, and the rest. And Bayern Munich is firmly at the top of the list for the rest. And I know it sounds weird to say that given Bayern's season, but look at the overall talent level on this team. And you cannot tell me that they are not capable of rallying and making one last charge at this thing. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if they could just make it fun for this last couple of months of the season, think about how uplifting that would be. We've seen the dregs of this season. We've seen how hard it is to watch them when they are not motivated, when they're not working together, when they're not receptive to the messaging from the coach, or quite frankly, when the coach is pushing all of the wrong buttons, which we have seen quite often this season. But a little bit of hope, just a little bit of hope heading into these final 2 months is all I was looking for coming out of that Lazio match. And that's what I got. So the rest of this season, it's not going to be spent lamenting what might have been or bitching about Thomas Tuchel, even though I probably will do that anyway. It's going to be spent with some hope, thinking about what this team might be able to accomplish if they can all find a way to work together, work in unison, and be that absolute force that we all know that they can be based on the talent level there. But sure, Tuchel's going to have to continue to push the right buttons. He's going to have to continue to make tough personnel choices. And he's going to have to continue to use players like Matthijs de Ligt and Thomas Müller and maybe even Eric Dier over some players who he prefers. Quite frankly, he probably doesn't want to use Leon Goretzka or Joshua Kimmich either. But it's hard to argue against using them right now. It's hard to argue against how they performed in that last match. I think Tuchel has to suck it up, swallow his ego, and has to start thinking about his own future and has to really start thinking about how good he could look coming out of this as a free agent coach. Because if he could come out of this, make a really strong charge at the Champions League, maybe put a scare into Bayer Leverkusen for the Bundesliga toward the end of the season, he's going to only help his own stock. So as much as I think having him as a lame duck coach is a bad idea, if he's motivated and focused, maybe he can make the best out of it. And Bayern Munich can experience the best of both worlds. And no, not the same kind of best of both worlds that Randall was experiencing in the movie Clerks, although that was a classic scene. But maybe, just maybe, Bayern Munich can have something positive work out of this season. I think we all would love to see that. So now that I've gotten off my soapbox about the little bit of hope that I do have for this Bayern Munich season, I do want to talk about some of the most recent rumors that we've seen because they do impact several key players. And I'm talking about Joshua Kimmich, Jamal Musiala, and Alphonso Davies. The noise around Kimmich is really weird because it's all right now Premier League focused. Manchester City, Liverpool, those are the two most prominent sides that have been linked with Kimmich. They are the two biggest clubs right now, I would say, that have the best chance in England to get him. Now, in the past, we have seen Kimmich linked to Manchester United. We've also seen PSG mentioned and even Real Madrid and FC Barcelona. But the two Premier League powers in Liverpool and Manchester City appear to be the biggest favorites at this point to land Kimmich. Now, is it realistic for Kimmich to leave? Sure, it is. He's had a miserable season operating under Thomas Tuchel. And I'm not even talking about his performances because I disagree with a lot of people out there. I don't think he's been that bad. I don't think the horde of people that are out there wanting to chase him out of Bavaria are 100% correct in what they're doing and what they're saying. I think Kimmich has had some really good moments this season. No, he's maybe not as press resistant as you all would like, but he can improve that. And he has been better at that in the past. Sure, it's not one of the strengths of his game, but I think he can be better. But you have to remember the human element of all of this with Kimmich. From the get-go, it was pretty much known via Tuchel himself, that he wanted a different six, that he wanted a different player at that position. So if you want to be human about all of this, how would you feel about that? So I can imagine how Kimmich was not only pissed off about it because he felt slighted, he probably felt betrayed by the club, which didn't back him at all. So let's not absolve the board or Christoph Freund or anyone else who didn't jump to Kimmich's back at any point this season and talk to Tuchel about all of those public statements he was making. Where were Karl-Heinz Rummenigge and Uli Hoeneß when someone needed to step up and say, this is enough of the nonsense with Tuchel targeting Kimmich? And I'm not saying Kimmich needs a bulletproof vest. I'm not saying he even needs the protection. But where is that mia san mia mentality? No, you had a coach come in and call for somebody's job, and I can almost assure you that at that point, when that happened early in the season, Kimmich at least a little bit mentally checked out on Tuchel and probably didn't want to buy into any of his BS. And I want to ask you, would you do that? Would you buy into what your boss was saying if your boss wanted to replace you? I think you have to remember the human side of it. And for Kimmich, it wouldn't shock me if he is exploring these options. But in the end, I don't think he's going anywhere because Joshua Kimmich, I think more than most players on this team, really exemplifies and embodies that Bayern Munich tradition, that Bayern Munich culture. He's someone that has openly stated how he wants to be with Bayern Munich. He wants to stay there. But I get the point and why he might be looking around after this season. I do think having a new coach will help. And I think Kimmich himself would admit that maybe he could have handled those slights a little bit better, maybe taken a different approach with Tuchel, and or maybe just said, F him, and went out and performed anyway. I'm going to prove him wrong. But whatever the case, it just didn't work out for Kimmich the way I think he wanted it to this year. It certainly didn't work out for Tuchel, who ultimately now is leaving the club. As for Jamal Musiala, I think there's a lot to this. And I don't necessarily think he'll be moving on this summer, despite some of the reports we're seeing. But I absolutely think that Musiala has a couple of things working for him in terms of wanting a move back to the Premier League. We all know his history. We know where he came from in Chelsea. We know that he probably has a chip on his shoulder that he couldn't break through there and probably wants to go back and prove himself in the Premier League and show that he is the world-class player that he always knew he was, but one that Chelsea couldn't seem to find the time of day for. So for Musiala, it makes a lot of sense that he would probably have interest. Now, we've seen Manchester City linked to him. We've seen Liverpool. We've seen Manchester United. We've even seen Arsenal and Chelsea. Yes, Chelsea, his former club. I think it probably doesn't happen this summer, despite some of the reports that we saw. But with a contract running through 2026, it absolutely would not shock me to see Jamal Musiala in the same exact position that Alphonso Davies is in right now, linked very closely to a team in another league, with most people assuming that he's going to make that jump. You know, a couple of things about the Musiala situation that stand out. His best friend on the team is Davies, who we'll talk about in a bit, but Davies pretty much seems like he has greased his way right out of Bavaria. So you take away that element for Musiala, but you also add in this element. Musiala went to Bayern for a reason, because it was easier to break through. Let's be honest. Chelsea is a mess. Chelsea has an academy system where they just acquire and acquire and acquire. And eventually, if you're on that campus long enough, you're going to get passed over just because of the pure volume of players that they have. At Bayern Munich, he was able to get special attention. He was able to get the eye of the coach and the sporting director, and he was able to be brought along in a really reasonable fashion where he could move and progress at his own pace, and it's worked out great. Now, if you've listened to me for extended periods, you know I haven't been the biggest fan of Musiala for the past year. I think his game has stunted a little bit. I think he's been miscast a bit as a 10. I think he's more of an outside player at this point in his career. I think Bayern has probably done him a disservice by playing him so much and either wearing him down or putting him in positions where he can't be that successful. But either way, I think his confidence has taken a little bit of a hit. I think he himself has not made the necessary changes in his game to have the type of success that I think we all think that he's capable of. But I think Musiala still has this huge ceiling. I mean, it is a tall ceiling. He's got so much potential. And it would be silly if Bayern Munich or any other club didn't want to retain him. But I think he's got his eye on a much bigger prize than the Bundesliga. I think Musiala, similar to Davies, knows that there's a bigger platform out there for him. And if he really wants to be that world star that he thinks he can be and that many people think he can be, he's going to have to go back to the Premier League, or he's going to have to go to a club like Real Madrid or FC Barcelona. Quite frankly, clubs that have that true worldwide appeal. And that's not a knock on the Bundesliga or Bayern Munich, but they're just not there yet. They're not on that level in terms of fan appeal. And that's not a shot at any of you Bayern Munich fans either. I mean, let's face it. You could say that Real Madrid and Barca and some of those Premier League teams are there's a lot of plastics, and you're right. But guess what? Those plastics buy jerseys. Those plastics buy a lot of apparel. Those plastics make stars. And Jamal Musiala, with an army of plastics behind him, could be an absolute worldwide star. So Musiala, I do think there's something to it. I think there is definitely smoke where there is fire. It is absolutely something that I think Bayern needs to be cognizant and aware of. They need to get proactive with this if they want to retain him. But I'll tell you what, I honestly think this is a situation where a year from now, Musiala will have his next stop already arranged and he'll probably move on from the club. Now, I know I'm projecting and I'm predicting with that, but I've seen this before. I've seen a player with this kind of ambition, and I've seen players who have a tie to a certain area. And I think Musiala, in his own mind, aside of money and aside of exposure, he's got a chip on his shoulder. He's got ambition. He wants to go back and prove himself at a place where he could not break through earlier, and that place is England. So for Musiala, I think fans should legitimately be concerned, and I think Bayern Munich should be concerned as well. This is not going to be an easy contract negotiation. And quite frankly, if Bayern is at the stage at this time next year where he has not re-upped, I think it's very reasonable to think that he'll be sold next summer. And by next summer, I mean 2025. And all of that leads us to Alphonso Davies. The most recent statements from Davies' agent say that all of the links and certainty around a specific move, it's all not true. There's nothing set in stone, blah, blah, blah. He's saving a little bit of face right now. I think everyone knows he's had discussions. It's been well publicized that he had meetings with both FC Barcelona and Real Madrid. And let's be honest, I don't think many of his other clients are probably warranting that kind of audience. So we can safely assume that Alphonso Davies is firmly on the radar of those two clubs in Spain, and also several big clubs in England, which would include Manchester City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester United. Go right down the line. Everybody wants a piece of Alphonso Davies, and there's a good reason for that, because his ceiling, much like Jamal Musiala's, is pretty much limitless. The problem for Davies has been his lack of ability to progress to get to the next level. And to be frank, a lot of that's on him and his unwillingness to change those things in his game. Or quite frankly, maybe he's unable to change them. Maybe he doesn't care. I don't know what the case is. What I do know is he is a very, very good player who has the capability of being a world-class, top-flight, best-of-the-best player. He could get there. It absolutely could happen, but that's up to him. And we've talked about it on this program for weeks, where we know that Davies wants that exposure. He is truly the Zoomer generation athlete who was brought up in this era where social media exposure and YouTube and everything, TikTok, it all matters more. His brand matters more to him than it does to, say, someone like Thomas Muller or Joshua Kimmich or Leon Goretzka or Leroy Sané even. Davies is focused on that. He wants to be a worldwide brand. He wants that platform just like Jamal Musiala does. And there's nothing wrong with craving that or wanting that. You're an athlete. You have a limited shelf life on your career. to go out and get that, to want that, that's okay. And fans have to accept that. But it does feel like at this point, no matter what Davies' agent says, that he is signed, sealed, and delivered to Real Madrid. I will be shocked if Bayern Munich and Real don't work out a deal for Davies this summer. And the numbers we're hearing, Real doesn't want to go past 40, which means they'll probably go to 50. Bayern wants something like 75 to 80. I think the best Bayern can get is 50. I think Real knows that. I think that they're going to actually target that number, but they're going to play hardball. They're going to see exactly how low Bayern Munich will go. And I think they'll probably start at around 30 to 35. And it will be insulting and Bayern will walk away from the table. And we've seen this song and dance a million times. But if I was a Bayern Munich fan, let's just say this. If I was going to invest in a kit for the 2024-2025 season, it probably shouldn't be an Alphonso Davies kit. I think the way things are pointing at this stage, he's probably very, very likely to leave town. So that about covers the latest transfer rumors. You could talk about a lot of different things, but one final point, and this isn't necessarily a transfer rumor. I did want to touch on this because while it's not specifically a rumor, it's something I thought about during this week as we saw the whole situation unfold with Matisse Tell and the contract extension that he got through 2029. It makes you wonder why he got a contract extension already. But if you look at how he was handled, you look at some of the statements that Tuchel made, public statements. These are out there. Tuchel firmly addressing why Tell was not getting more time, talked about his deficiencies, that kind of thing. And lo and behold, as soon as Tuchel did that, we started to see rumors about Tell possibly making a move to Manchester United. Now, I feel like that's a little soft from Tell and his agent, but I get it because the kid is very talented. Again, another high ceiling player, someone who still has a lot to prove, but really has the potential to be great. And I get that he wants more time and he deserves it, quite frankly. However, I will say this. I think Tuchel did a pretty good job of working him in the beginning of the season, getting him some super sub minutes. And we could all see how Tell was progressing. We could see the kind of impact he makes. I saw some stat this week that he's averaging a goal every 98 minutes, which puts him at a pretty high level, I think behind Robert Lewandowski and Harry Kane or something like that in terms of Bundesliga all-time ratios there. I'd have to really look up the stat again, but it was something crazy like that. But it was definitely a goal every 98 minutes. But regardless, all that tells us is Tell has good natural talent. He's progressing nicely. He has done extremely well in taking advantage of those opportunities. He's not quite ready to be a starter yet, and I'm not quite sure if Bayern knows where they want to use him. I like him as a wide player. I think that's where he's best. I don't think his best position is going to be as a striker, and that's fine because I think there's going to be some turnover at the wing position. I think Serge Gnabry could be leaving this summer. We don't know about Leroy Sané. At some point, Bayern Munich might actually be tired of Kingsley Coman getting hurt so much. Who knows what Bayern has with Brian Zaragoza? Something tells me that they bought something that is not quite as refined as they would like, because if there was ever a time to integrate Zaragoza onto the field, it would have been over the last couple of weeks. But the guy who they paid more money to bring in early can't get on the pitch at all. So for Tell, it makes a lot of sense that he got this extension, that Bayern wants to wrap him up. But why did they feel the need to have to do it right now? Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think they felt like they had to do this because of Tuchel. And again, I don't crush him about everything. And I'm not completely anti-Tuchel. I'm definitely more anti than pro-Tuchel at this point. But what I'll say about this is how he handled the situation in terms of that long stretch of time where Tell went from being a super sub to getting no minutes. And then the public statements about Tell, it's pretty crazy. I don't think that Tuchel did Bayern any favors with that. And once those rumors started and we started to see that Manchester United, who has a legitimate need to add another attacker, could potentially come after Tell, Bayern felt that pressure. And this is all Tuchel induced. So no matter how you feel about Tuchel, whether you're pro Tuchel, you're anti Tuchel, it doesn't matter. He's made some big mistakes. And I think one of them was losing Tell in the rotation when there was really no reason to, and then also going public with some of his gripes about Tell's lack of progression in his development. And because of that, I think Byron had to pay at a time where they probably didn't necessarily want to have to make an extension or offer an extension. So that is the Tuchel tax, I will call it, on Tell, like all that alliteration. But I did want to get that in there because while it's not a specific transfer rumor, I do feel like Tuchel probably cost Bayern Munich a little bit more money with how he handled all of that. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back. We're going to talk about another hot button topic, one that took over the site on Thursday, which was analyzing Julian Nagelsmann's rumored starting 11 for Germany. We'll touch on that, maybe a little bit of Xabi Alonso, and then discuss that latest episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which, again, another solid effort by Larry David and the gang. Hang with us. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Weekend Warm-Up Show. This is Chuck Smith. I am bringing you this one later than usual, but if you listen to my preamble, you know why. Things happen, so glad to be doing this at the time I'm doing it. Hopefully you're going to stick with it, even though it's a little bit late coming out, but there was a good reason for that. As I stated before we hit that break, I really wanted to dig into this rumored starting 11 for Julian Nagelsmann at the Euro 2024 competition because, man, I looked at it. I had a lot of questions. I'm not saying I firmly disagreed with every selection or even the majority of them, but I have a lot of questions, and I'm not 100% sure that Nagelsmann is seeing this through. So let's talk about it. Let's name what Bild says will be the starting 11, and it looks like Manuel Neuer at goalkeeper, Antonio Rudiger and Jonathan Tah at center back, Joshua Kimmich at right back, Benjamin Heinrichs at left back. We will talk about that. Robert Andrich and Toni Kroos is the central midfield duo. Ilkay Gundogan at the 10. Jamal Musiala and Florian Wirtz playing those wide attacking positions. And another thing that I'm a little bit unsure of, Wirtz is absolutely not someone who I see as a pure wing. But if he's playing in those half spaces, maybe he could make it work. Either way, there's a lot of potential for flaw there. At striker, Niklas Füllkrug. Okay, now that you've had a couple of seconds to absorb that, let's give you some of the rationale that Bild had. Manuel Neuer will definitely start. Nagelsmann has already called Ter Stegen and informed him that Neuer will be back. Nagelsmann doesn't fully trust David Robin or Robin Gosens on the left. Therefore, Benjamin Heinrichs could get the move from the right. Kimmich will play the right, so that opens Heinrichs to move to the left. Andrich or Pascal Gross will play in the defensive midfield next to Toni Kroos. Ilkay Gundogan will have more freedom and a more attacking role, so he'll play the 10, which, man, that is one of the more disappointing selections for me. Musiala, Wirtz, and Sané will compete for the wing half-space positions. Musiala and Wirtz are said to have an advantage over Sané at this point because Sané will miss the preparation games for the Euros due to his suspension. And Niklas Füllkrug is currently the starter up front with Kai Havertz and Dennis Ingdov, who's having a great season, by the way, a little bit behind him. So obviously we know Thomas Muller not there, Serge Gnabry not there, Leon Goretzka not there, Niklas Zula not there, Mats Hummels not there. I could go on and on and on with who's not there in the starting 11. Doesn't mean they won't be included on the squad, but clearly there are some things that are questionable. And I'll start with Gundogan because I don't hate Gundogan. I know it seems like I always kind of pinpoint things on him. I don't think he's been as great a leader as Nagelsmann has made him out to be. I don't think playing him at the 10 is going to really make this German national team attack be dynamic in any way. It's not a knock on him, but I just don't view him as the most effective player they could use at the 10 position. In fact, I might have him as low as 4 or 5, but what do I know? I like Musiala there and Wirtz there above him, and I'm not even a massive fan of Musiala at the 10. I like Thomas Muller there above him. Whatever the case, Gundogan there is a problem for me. And one of the reasons I, I don't like Gundogan on the squad is that his apathy toward the game, how he approaches it. It's one of those things that we hated about the final years of Yogi Love and how the veterans approach that. Ilkay Gundogan was one of the primary people who had this kind of like all shucks mentality about things. Which brings us to Toni Kroos. Toni Kroos is a fantastic player. In my mind, fantastic player, I should say. In my mind, he's one of the best to ever do it at that position. I think he, in his prime, absolutely a complete midfielder, someone who could do everything you would want out of the position, calm on the ball, always in control. Passing was always great, could contribute offensively with goals when he needed to. An absolute all-timer. Can't say enough good things about him. But much like Gundogan, toward the end of Yogi Love's tenure, there was an apathy across that team. And Toni Kroos kind of got absolved of all of that when Yogi Love decided he was going to get rid of Thomas Muller and Mats Hummels and Jerome Boateng. We all remember that. Toni Kroos, someone from that generation, someone who was at the heart of all of the issues, just like those three players were. If you were going to pinpoint blame on those three, there was no way you could absolve Toni Kroos of any blame in that situation as well. So for Toni Kroos to be back, okay, I can deal with that. It's not a horrible thing. He's a veteran. He's got experience, just like I would like Mats Hummels, because I think you need players who have had that, been there, done that kind of mentality to help guide younger players through. So Toni Kroos, if you want to bring him back, I'm all for it. Putting him in the starting lineup right away? Not so sure about that. Toni Kroos is still a great player, but he's someone who's been away from this version of the team. He's also someone who I wouldn't say has always handled adversity on the national team level as well as some other people. He kind of gets a free pass and doesn't take any hits, and we talked about what happened with Yogi Love. But even as that all progressed and went on, Toni Kroos, who didn't elevate his performances when Germany needed him to, got away with things. No one pressed him. It was never about, the problems were never about Toni Kroos, even though he was a big part of it. So while he's back and while I don't mind him competing for a spot, I'm not quite sure that he is the one that should be there. Now, the other midfield partner there, Andrich and Gross, listen, if you're going to make a change, I guess. I don't know that it's going to be any better than what they've had in there. This is a very delicate situation for Julian Nagelsmann. I don't know what he's going to do or who he's going to end up using there to partner with Kroos. But I think it's a legitimate possibility that it might not work. And I know a lot of people right now are calling for Alexander Pavlovich. And I get it because he's the hot new thing and he's been extremely good for Bayern Munich. However, Pavlovich might be a little bit away. I don't know if he's exactly the player that Germany needs right now in terms of being as well-rounded as he could be. I love a lot about Pavlovich's game. Love his steady play. I love how he sees the field. I like how he really does look like he wants to get in on challenges and tackle people and make defensive plays. I love all of that. I like that he started to make improvements on tracking runners. I want to see a little bit more. So while I'm not ready to anoint him for a spot on the team right yet, by the time Euros gets here, I might be all in on the Pavlo train, okay? So I'm not going to dismiss that. And I know a lot of people want to see him. And listen, I'm not totally against it. It might end up being the perfect matchup. It just doesn't seem like Julian Nagelsmann wants to pull that trigger. And I don't know if that will happen given that. The striker situation I'm less concerned about because I think Füllkrug is the best fit for right now. I just think he works best on German national team, much better than even works with at Borussia Dortmund. I think he's the guy that Germany needs. He's the best of the lot. Would I like to see Timo Werner back in the mix? Absolutely, because I think Timo can still do a lot of things to create offense. I don't think he's going to get a shot under Nagelsmann. If you want to look back at how that relationship might be, I wouldn't say it's probably something that's beneficial to Timo. If you remember during COVID year, Timo could have stayed and played with RB Leipzig in the Champions League, but he did opt to take that move to Chelsea early, and I think that really rubbed Nagelsmann the wrong way. And unfortunately for Timo, sometimes when you make choices like that, which I wouldn't have made that choice if I was Timo Werner, I would have stayed and played with my current team through the official end of the season. I mean, it was a worldwide pandemic. I get it. No one really knew how to handle anything. But if I put myself in that spot, I would definitely have stayed and played with my team. I would not have left. And I think Nagelsmann remembers that. So, Timo, I don't think you're getting the call. Musiala and Wirtz, very interesting. It should be fun to watch them play, theoretically. I don't know how they'll work together, and maybe it will help in wider positions. I think if this is true, this report is true, that Nagelsmann wants to use them, I do think it will be more as a narrow setup with Wirtz and Musiala operating in those half spaces, allowing Kimmich and Heinrichs to get up the field. I don't know if Kimmich can continue the kind of play he showed against Lazio earlier in the week at right back. He struggled the first couple of games there. I don't know that he's fully bought into it. Maybe he's accepting the move now, and maybe it will help things get better. But if he's not great there, there is really no other option. I mean, Germany has tried everyone and their mother at right back. It's not working out. Similarly, on the left side, you're talking about moving Benjamin Heinrichs over there, and Heinrichs isn't exactly a world beater. I get why Nagelsmann would have doubts about David Rahm and Robin Gosens. I mean, who doesn't? They are two offensively minded guys who, quite frankly, shirk their defensive responsibilities on a regular basis. So I get it. You want someone who's going to be able to provide you the best of both worlds. There I go using that again. Why is that? That's the theme of today. And no, I'm not going to go pop in one of those Randall Graves videos when I get home. You guys are all now thinking that that is on my agenda for tonight, but it is not, okay? I will not be doing that. You can check my search history if you want. But either way, I'm not sure Heinrichs is going to be the kind of player that you're ultimately going to win with. Do I think that this Germany 11 can win the Euros? No, I don't think it can. Do I think with some tweaking? No, I don't think they can win it. Do I think they can be competitive? Yeah, sure. I think they can do that. I don't love the center back pairing either. Rudiger, I think his best days are behind him. I still like him for Germany and probably think he's the best option at center back. Jonathan Tah, I know, has had a very good season. I know he has. He still seems like he's going to be prone to one big mistake a game that's going to cost Germany. So not really thrilled with what I saw out of that projected starting 11. I'm assuming Bild had some good sources on that. I know you guys are all chuckling at that, but I would think that Bild wouldn't just throw this at the wall. It could be a very tough summer for fans of the German national team. Really quickly, I did want to touch on Xabi Alonso and what's going on there. It's a very tough situation because Bayern Munich obviously wants him. He's got ties to both Bayern Munich and Liverpool. It's going to come down to a bidding war of sorts. You see stories day after day about which club has the advantage, whether it's Liverpool, whether it's Bayern Munich. It doesn't really matter at this point. Somebody's going to get him. It's probably going to be one of those two teams, but let's not forget this. Xabi Alonso, much like he was as a player, is cold and calculated. He's going to survey everything. He's going to only make a decision when he's 100% sure it's going to work. And if you remember how he played, not only was he extremely intelligent and smart, and he could scan the field and see things, and he always seemed to make the right moves under pressure, he's not going to be forced into jumping if he's not ready and he doesn't see this version of Bayern Munich or this version of Liverpool as the best setup for him. He's in a no-lose situation with Leverkusen. They're going to get raided over the summer. He's still going to retain his best player, most likely, in Florian Wirtz. And the team will probably have enough money to go out and get some complimentary pieces that he can still win with. His stock, no matter what happens, will not drop. So he is set up perfectly. If he doesn't feel like this is the right move, he won't make it. And for Bayern Munich and Liverpool, they're going to have to not only out-duel each other, but they're going to have to provide him with a plan for how it will work, what the advantages are of him moving to either one of those clubs. And he's going to have to buy into it and believe it, because if he has any semblance of doubt, just like he did when he was a player, he'll hold on to the ball and find a better option. So for Xabi Alonso, the world is perfect. But for Bayern Munich, if they don't have a viable number two option, they better start thinking about it, because I would not rely on, with all of the turmoil that has happened this season at Bayern Munich, I would not rely on Xabi Alonso getting sentimental at this point and just going back to Bayern Munich because he appeared to love his time at the club. We're going to take one more quick break. I'll give you a bit of the entertainment rundown where I'm at on things, and then we will wrap this show up. Hang with us for just another minute. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Warm-Up Show. This is Chuck Smith. Thanks for hanging in there. The final segment of the show, we usually touch on some of the entertainment topics, things that I'm watching, all of that. Of course, I have been heavy into Curb Your Enthusiasm. It was another quality episode by Larry David. Maybe not to the heights of the previous week. I believe that was episode 3, which was tremendous, disgruntled. This one was very good, though. Larry and Irma going to couples counseling. Leon having to play a big role in getting some information and going to a urologist, which he didn't know what it was. Some really, really funny stuff. Another good episode of Curb, where all of these outlying storylines that were going on, all Larry-centric, but they were all going on, all tied together so nicely. I love that about Curb, and I think that is the true genius of the show. Not only with Larry and how he puts himself into every bad situation and annoys people, but how all of those storylines end up intersecting by the end of an episode. I can't say enough about that. Now, listen, was the subject matter as entertaining as some of the previous Curb seasons or some of the other classic Curb episodes? No, but it was still a very good episode. I laughed a lot. If I was going to rank it on a 5-point scale, I'd easily give it a 4.0. Now, I know I gave the previous episode a 5.0, but this was still really good, still really worth my time. And I had a couple of moments where I just legitimately laughed out loud, which is how I always gauge a Curb episode. There was so much fun stuff with it. Leon, everything with Leon in this was great. The Disney store theme of the show. Vince Vaughn continues to kill it in that role too. Just a lot of fun. I really am enjoying this season of Curb. And I was worried after that first episode, but I think all of those concerns I had have been alleviated. I did want to say, if you've listened to me before, you know that I was at one point all in on The Walking Dead. I loved it. But little by little, the show let me down. And it got worse and worse and worse until by the end, I was hate watching the show. All of the offshoots, tried them, they all sucked. So when I started to see this next generation of shows come up, one with Daryl, didn't watch it. Now, I saw this latest one pop up with Rick and Michonne, and I didn't even think about it. It didn't even cross my mind to watch, because I have now realized I have become someone who really loved the first couple of seasons of The Walking Dead. I have transformed into someone who cannot stand it, because I feel so scorned with the way that the writers and showrunners ran the show over the past, whatever, what it was, 5 seasons, 6 seasons, whatever it was. It killed it for me. I was so disappointed. And every week I would get excited to watch it, and I would come out saying, why did I just waste an hour? And literally by the end, I was hate watching the show. And it really kind of hurts with that, because I did really at one point think the show was borderline one of the top 2 or 3 best shows on TV. The original 2 seasons I thought were really good. The original, the third one I thought was good. And then it sucked after that. And I hate that I'm saying that, but it's just how it was. But my friend Rob, who I often talk TV with, he was like, you got to give the Rick and Michonne story, you've got to give the show a try. You have to try it out. So I did DVR it. I will start to catch up on episodes, and I'll give some brief reviews on that, because I think a lot of you are like me. You're probably too pissed. If you did like The Walking Dead, you're probably too pissed to even want to hear about it now, because you came away scorned like I did. So hopefully it's good. And hopefully it gives me something I can jump into, because aside of Curb, I think it's going to be a barren spring for me. I know in the summer we're going to get The Boys, we're going to get House of the Dragon. I mean, I think we're going to get Cobra Kai. So I'll be all into all of that. But it could take a little bit there. It could be another period like I had, I guess, early in 2023, where I wasn't into anything. I wasn't watching anything. So I really couldn't have any kind of entertainment rundown. So with that, we'll wrap up the show now that you know what I might get into. But I appreciate everybody's patience. As I said, it was it was kind of a crazy day for me, but it was good that once everything cleared out and after I was done with family and everything like that, I was able to take some time and, do this show, and happy to have done that. As always, you can get me at the Barrel Blog. You can get the site at Bavarian FB Works. You can get I Need No Name at BFWINNN. You can get Tom Adams at Tommy Adams 71. You can get all of our wonderful writers and podcasters at BavarianFootballWorks.com. We love bringing you guys all of the latest Bayern Munich and Germany coverage. It has been, it's been a really busy time. So we know, when you check our site, you want to be informed. You want to see things that are entertaining. You want to be informed, and we're working our hardest to get you everything that we find, giving you our spin on it, and hopefully you are enjoying that. And I guess I should mention, too, we did open a Twitter account for our podcast network, since it has branched out and created its own business. So at Bavarian Podcast is our Twitter handle for BPW. So if you get a chance, give it a follow. We will be posting all of our episodes on that as well. So thanks for hanging in there with us. Enjoy the match this weekend. Have a couple of beers on me. We will see you next time.